here, but... And you're going to force me to turn and look back. Well, let me welcome you to this meeting. My name is Tom Berger, and this is the Alaska Native Review Commission. And the commission was established by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, which is an international organization of Eskimos from Alaska, Canada, and Greenland. And the commission is also sponsored by the World Council of Indigenous Peoples, which is an international organization of Indian people from North and South America and represents Indigenous people in other countries as well. Right, this is the one? All right. Well, I don't think anybody had any difficulty hearing what I was saying. The Commission's job, as set out in its terms of reference, is to consider the way in which the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971 has worked out here in Alaska. That was a landmark in the modern era of Native claims. It was the first major settlement of Native claims in this century, and it has been very closely watched by Native people in other countries and by their governments. And the Commission's work, therefore, though it is focused on Alaska, is of interest to Native people in other countries as well. Now, this Commission was established by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and the World Council of Indigenous Peoples, but it is independent. And we are holding meetings like this one in every region of Alaska in order to give Alaskan Natives and Alaskans generally an opportunity to discuss the way in which the Claims Act, the settlement, has worked out here in Southeast Alaska, the features that have worked out well, the features of the Act that people feel haven't worked out well. We have been hearing evidence already. We've been to Monick and Tununik in the Bethel region. We've been to Gulkana and Copper Center in the Otna region. We've been to Tanacross and Nanana in the interior. The students at the Alaska Native students at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks asked us to hold a meeting there, so they could present their views on all of these issues. Issues that come under the heading 1991, of course, are issues that keep coming up: the transferability of shares, the implications that may hold so far as loss of control of Native corporations is concerned, and the loss of the land that the corporations hold under the settlement, the question of taxation of Native land. The question keeps coming up, why are the Native children born since 1971 not entitled to be enrolled as shareholders? All of those questions, but beneath those questions, there seem to be some essential themes that keep coming up: the land, subsistence, the family, the future, Native self-government, sometimes, in fact, most of the time referred to as sovereignty, but it's really a question of Native self-government. The hearings that we have held so far have been well attended, and we've stayed in each village or urban center as long as people wanted us to stay so that we could hear the views of everybody that might want a chance to speak. We carry on informally. There's a sign-up sheet there, but really don't worry about that. If you feel like speaking, just step up here to this chair, if you don't mind, and speak to this microphone. We're having everything taken down by Jeff Berliner, who's the man with all the audio equipment here. And that is so that there will be a permanent record of all that is said at every meeting in every region of Alaska, and so that when I come to write my report about ANCSA and about 1991 and about Native land and Native self-government, it will be based on what you have told me at these meetings. There will be a permanent record of all that is said at these meetings. Eileen McLean is also with the commission, and she is seated at the table here, and she has been in Southeast Alaska now for a little while organizing meetings here. We're going to meet here in Juneau today and tomorrow and the next day. Then on Thursday, we're going to Sitka for a meeting there for 2 days, and then to Angoon for 2 days, and then to Ketchikan and to Kluwak, and then we're going to visit New Metlakatla before we leave Southeast. So we'll be here holding these meetings for the next 2 weeks, and I hope that we will learn a great deal. Now, many of these questions about ANCSA and the corporations and IRA councils and 1991 and shares and all the rest of it are, on the face of it, legal questions, constitutional questions, meat and drink for lawyers, but beneath them lie deeply held convictions about relations between one people and another, between Native peoples and the dominant society. And that those are issues that arise in every country where there is a Native minority, and concerns that people have about those questions are quite profound, and they engage their deepest feelings in many instances. Well, I hope these meetings will help us to find out what has happened and why, and what is to be done in connection with these 1991 issues, measures can be taken with respect to Native land and self-government, and I'm here to listen. I've been talking now for a few minutes, but this is the only chance I ever get to say anything, so I'm taking advantage of it. And I'll be here this evening, and then tomorrow we'll start again and carry on tomorrow, and then tomorrow evening, and then again on Wednesday through to Wednesday evening. So there should be an opportunity for anyone to participate who wishes to do so. With that said, we're open for business, and please feel free just to step up and take a seat and let us have your views.
Thank you. My name is Jerry Ward. I'm Athabascan. I'm from the interior. I'm in the legislature in the State House of Representatives. And I tried to get to testify when you were up in Anchorage, but because of the session, I was down here. So since I'm glad that you're here, and I'm glad that you're going across the state so people have a chance to testify. I would like to relay what my feelings are, my frustrations are concerning the land claims. In 1969, I can remember a group of people coming to my mother and father's house asking for some money to take a delegation back to Washington, D.C. And my family gave some money to them, and that was the first time I'd ever heard of Native land claims, and actually that there's going to be some form of a settlement. I can remember later on a big rush for additional gathering of money throughout the, at least the Anchorage area where I'm from, to send back a delegation to increase from 10 million to 40 million acres, which was done late one evening, and that was done by a lobbying effort. I became a regular in the land claims, and I told a lot of people, and I'm sure that other people in this room told them the same thing. I went to all the Native families, all the Indian families, and Eskimos and Aleuts in the Anchorage area, in the Matanuska Valley and Kenai, that I could find and help register them to whichever region that they were in. And I told people that this is good. You know, we're going to have ground, we're going to have land, we're going to have a place to build a home, we're going to have some money, we're going to have things that rightfully belong to the Alaska Natives. And we're not going to take nothing away from anybody. What we're doing is we're finally receiving what is already yours. And I remember one gentleman up at Red Shirt Lake named Shim Pete, and he told me, he said, young man, you don't understand. The money and the land's all going to end up owned by the attorneys and big corporations. I don't think all the land and money, not all of it yet, is owned by attorneys and large corporations. But if you take the $1 billion in the 40 million acres, 44 million acres, basically something the size of New Jersey, the land now, how much individually do Alaska Natives have a house on? And the people in this room can look at, you know, the amount of land that you've received individually in order to build a house on, or your children, or their children. I found that it's non-existent, and it's been many years now, and it's very slow coming. The $1 billion, it flowed through. We own a few things. I call them palaces, or else monuments to the corporate world, whether they're big commercial buildings in Juneau, big commercial buildings in Anchorage or wherever, or hotels in Hawaii, or banks in Panama. It doesn't make any difference. They haven't helped my relatives and my people whatsoever. There's more people on other kinds of programs that are benefit from the oil industry because of the taxation through the state than the land claims there ever was. This I don't think is any one person's fault. I think that this was the design of the land claims. And see, and the land claims, in my opinion, was no more than a mechanism to build the Trans-Alaska oil pipeline. As a mechanism to keep the oil revenue from going to just the Native people. Right or wrong, that's the way it worked out. And that's what the whole thing was, and it was a way to get that pipeline corridor through. And the deal was cut, and we have to abide by it. But I feel as far as the claims itself and settling any dispute that there was, Alaska has to belong in its entirety to the people that most rightly deserve it. And in that case, we have cut it up. We've taken 44 million acres for the Alaska Natives and the state and the federal government. I disagree with the federal government owning any of it myself, but that's another part of it. What we have is we have a danger here in December 18th, 1991, or January the next year on. And I've been saying this for 10 years now, and I have a tremendous concern. What's going to happen? If you take a look at most of the corporate structures right now, December the 18th, 1991 is when a lot of the notes that are due on these commercial ventures become due. There's no mystery. That's when the stocks become saleable. That's when the mergers may come. That's when legislation will come in order to lock up and our release. That's why it's got to be approached in a systematic manner, because if you've got something, which we have got right now, something the size of New Jersey, there's people in this world that are well and have thought about this far in advance of anybody in this room, and myself especially. And when they signed the land claims in 1971, they knew that 20 years they're going to be in a real good position to take that land away. What we have to do is recognize that this is a real estate transaction, that this is exactly what it is. This is a group and a piece and a parcel of land which represents an entire culture, an entire way of a culture. And if that land base is gone, then the native culture will be gone. The fact that we're hanging on to a corporate structure as such, it bothers me, because the corporate structure right now, there's no corporations. None of the 13 regional corporations can barely even get a quorum. That means that one-third of their shareholders usually are all that participate in a voting pattern. So any publicly owned corporation, if it's understood, if it's truly understood, that means that some 15% of the outstanding shares can control an entire corporation. That means that right now, within any regional corporation, one-half the voting shares do not vote. What are they going to do? If they're offered $10,000 for their shares, they're going to sell it. Maybe they don't have to be offered $10,000 a share. Maybe just the corporate president will sell out for us and we don't have to worry about it. The structure itself bothers me quite a bit. What we have, if we take a look at exactly how mergers and how corporates work, the structure of a corporation, it leaves to where the people that participate in the corporation and care about the corporation, care about the land base, care about native culture, will be outruled by those who don't. Because right now there are none that participate 100%. So that in this case, the unspoken ones, the ones that don't participate, and we all have them. We have relatives that never have participated in saving the land, participated in the corporate structure, and they're not going to. Now, how we rattle to that point and get them, myself, and everybody else encouraged to participate, I don't know. I don't think it's joint venturing totally all land, encumbering all land, because what we have to do is we have to remember that that base is there. I think that what we've got here is we've got a basic problem. The land claims itself was not designed to solve any Aboriginal rights. It was not created for that. It's created to get a pipeline to Alaska so they could suck oil out. As simple as that. Okay, they made it. But in doing so, they have put a small window and an opening there. I've got a very basic feeling, and I hope that this testimony, I want at least the public and the world, if, or anybody that may be listening to this, is that I believe that the land claims was no more than a tool for an oil company to get a pipeline, oil companies, and that's all it was. But in doing so, what they had to do is they had to acknowledge that the Alaska Natives has a claim to at least 44 million acres of ground. They have a right to exercise their abilities to govern that land and themselves. They've been here for thousands of years. They're willing to work in a cooperative manner with, in this case, the state of Alaska, the federal government, large multinational companies. It can be done. In fact, it must be done, because if you take a look at the entire spectrum of it, there's only one entity that can lose. It is not the multinationals, it's not the banks, it's not the federal government, it's not the state of Alaska. It's not the United Nations. It's only the Alaska Natives that can lose. We are the only ones in the vulnerable position. We are the only ones that are capable of losing. So if everybody is participating in an equal manner, there's only X amount of profit and chips to talk about. And I only added the way to put it. And that's cutting up the wealth of the Alaska Natives. We're the only ones in a vulnerable position. No. I don't think just to do the hollering and the screaming about staying united and let's get together and let's do this and that. No, we need to look at the actual structure. We need to go back to the basics. There's $1 billion been spent, half federal and half state. $1 billion. Where did it go? Who's got it? What happened to it? Who did we make rich? Who do we make poor? How many have got new homes? How many have got a new recliner? You know, this has not been answered. So what we have is we have a fault. We have a fault in the land claims itself. We were given land, which took us 8 years longer than we thought to get a hold of it. We still don't have all of our land claims settled at this date. We don't necessarily need an extension to acquire our land, or because it took longer to get our land. But we did not have the cash basis to get into the world market system as it now exists. That $1 million was piddled away And I'm not casting aspersions upon any one person, but nobody in this room got really any amount of it to speak of. That $1 billion was spent in the professional world to various joint ventures, to various, various accounting firms, legal fees, legal battles, lobbying efforts, but it's built and fed the system. Well, that money's gone. But what it's done, and now the land's starting to be transferred. They were supposed to come simultaneously so that we could compete in this world. But by holding back the transfer of the land and making us spend the money to get the land, which was supposed to have come the same day, what we have in effect has happened to the native people is we could not possibly have been on track on the 20-year spectrum. And without the tools, and in this world, there are only a few tools. Now, some corporations go out and sell off timber and oil to make up the tools, meaning money, to compete. That's not the way it was supposed to be. We are supposed to have the tools to compete in the modern day market. The corporations were. And instead, they were given the tools to try to get the land base. So it was a reversal, and it was the defeat of, it was defeating the day that it started. I, for one, truly understand exactly what this is, because it was never intended for the Alaska Native land claims for us to use the greater amount of our money to spend to try to acquire the land which was ours in the first place. And that is what the problem is, and that is where the problem lies, and what we need to do is need to address that issue. Okay, because the simple facts are is now that we are finally getting the land, we spent $1 billion getting there, we do not have the tools to proceed on. So now what we're going to have is we're going to have shareholders, we're going to have dissent, and we're going to have, rightfully so, people absolutely mad about something very simply. We are now going to start selling off assets, not making profits. Let's not kid ourselves. We know what we're talking about. The corporations are selling off profits in order to just keep going, because the money's gone. Where did it go? Now we got to start selling off our kids' futures, and it's not supposed to work that way. December the 18th, 1971, the deal was cut. We were supposed to get $1 billion and 44 million acres, and it wasn't supposed to be 12 years down the pike, or 11 years, or 8 years. It was supposed to be day after tomorrow back then. But no, they held it out and says, okay, here's a bunch of attorneys, come along with the deal, and they're going to take care of your money. Well, the money's all gone, so now they say you can have the land. Well, in order to just catch up, we now have corporate leaders that are sitting there kind of, and they have to sell off their assets or assets in order to just keep the system going and competing. And I, for one, am glad that you give me the opportunity to testify here, because it was a very cruel hoax that was played upon the Native people, and it was wrong, and it should not have been done. Because instead of right now figuring out how are we going to extend the 20-year period, how are we going to merge and make it a large Native corporation for all 13 corporations, how are we going to get the young children into it, we ought to be right now self-sustaining. We ought to have our 44 million acres. We ought to be a part of the mainstream economy, and we're not, because it was withheld from us. It was withheld from us, and we had lies given to us, because we were supposed to get the land and the money at the same time. Not no land and lawyers to fight to get the land, which ate up all the money. Thank you for this time to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. Thank you very much.
My name is Wally Olson. I'm a professor at the University of Alaska. And I've watched the land claim since 1964, when 1967 at Minto in the Interior Villages, and then down here. Since the passage of the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act in 1971, many changes have taken place. And looking back, there might have been better ways to implement the settlement, but however, the act has been passed, and I doubt that it can be repealed today. And I feel that now we must cope with what is, not what might have been. And as part of that reality, the Act requires that in 1991, the shares of stock and ensuing control of the land and the resources be made public. That is, that they be can be bought or sold in the public market. In talking to many Native people, I've heard a variety of views regarding 1991 and the possible sale. Some shareholders are looking forward to the time when they can sell their shares. These people feel they can do a better job of handling the shares than the people presently in management position. On the other hand, other shareholders have told me that they will not only keep their shares, they want to buy shares if they become available. And they want to buy shares for themselves and their descendants. And so I feel that these choices properly belong to the shareholders themselves, and that to deprive either side or any of these people of the right to make that choice would be to deprive them of the rights that they have under the Act. So with these issues in mind, I think that what needs to be done now is to help the shareholders make the choices in 1991 in the most knowledgeable manner possible. I think the corporation should be given some assistance in development so that they may actualize their potential to the greatest extent prior to 1991. And I think to understand what needs to be done, we need to recall briefly what took place with the passing of the Settlement Act. Prior to the passing of the Act, many Native leaders and representatives had some input into the formation, but a large majority of the Native people themselves were not directly involved. They did not understand what effect the Act might have upon them or their descendants. Now, normally when people become shareholders in a corporation, they do so by their own individual choice. They decide what stocks or shares they wish to buy and invest their money with the knowledge of what that particular company is doing. With the Native people, this was not the case. They automatically became shareholders overnight, whether they wanted to or not. Furthermore, some of them would necessarily have to become directors of corporations, and again, they had no training in such tasks. And yet, in a few years, they'd have to make major decisions for all of the shareholders. Added to this is the problem that many of the people in the rural areas in 1971 and perhaps today are living on or near the poverty level. And what they were looking for in the land claims was jobs, employment, some direct benefits. And this may not be the best way to run a corporation or to make a business, but that's what they wanted. And so the corporations have been under a great deal of pressure to provide jobs and do things that maybe they can't really do as a good business. But over the past 13 years, the corporations have been working to develop as best they could, given the conditions, social and cultural, and the business milieu in which they've had to operate. Some corporations have been rather successful, others have not. If they're to have an opportunity to grow in the few remaining years before 1991, and if the shareholders are to make the most informed decisions possible in that year, I suggest that several things have to be done. I might like to use a little analogy here. It would be much like if some Eskimo handed you a harpoon and gave you a skin boat and said, okay, now go out and be a successful whaler, and push you out to sea and say, there you go. You're doomed to failure. You could never make it. Well, in the same way, corporations, the corporate format was set up, and they said, okay, now be successful, but with not the tools to do that. So my recommendations would be something like this. Number one, the corporation should be given some assistance with legal problems. I think if you look closely at the Native corporations over the years, you will see that they've had to spend a great deal of money on attorneys. This has been a major expense. Just to enter into the business world, to clear the way for things, they've had to spend fantastic sums. Now, this money could have been used to develop personnel within the corporations with shareholders, and instead legal fees have been a drain on the resources they've had. Now, normally one would not recommend that a business corporation be given legal assistance, but in this case, where the directors and shareholders had no training or background and yet had to make choices with involved legal questions, they should have been given that help. Perhaps there could be some way in which the corporations could be compensated for the money they've had to pay to attorneys to legally get started, and that money could then be used to train personnel in leadership positions for the coming years. Also, there are volunteer organizations that, such as retired business executives, and these type of people might be able to help the corporations maximize their potential so that they're well-organized and profitable, strong corporations come 1991. Another thing that can be done is to assist the boards of directors to become better informed about business matters and the choices they have to make. I know that several corporations in the early days, at their own expense, had training programs for their boards of directors. But since that time, new people have come to the boards, and these people also need to be trained in business matters. Yet some of them, because they need to hunt or fish or work at some other job to support their families, cannot simply take the time to be trained in corporate matters. I suggest that grants be made available for corporate boards of directors to be given training in business and corporate operations. The grant should be enough to provide support for their families while they're being trained. Secondly, I would suggest that we look at equal opportunity. In many cases, Native corporations have had to enter a business world in which competing organizations have had a great deal of experience and over the years have won certain benefits which were not available to new corporations coming in. For instance, here in southeastern Alaska, two large corporations were given 50-year contracts for timber and guaranteed logging. I don't want to get into the complex way that they set According to one conservation group representative, in the past 2 years, the U.S. Forest Service has received $12 million from stumpage fees, Southeastern. But at the same time, the cost of operating the Forest Service in this area and providing many services to these companies has cost the taxpayers $150 million. In addition, each year they are given $40 million to help with roads and other incentives for logging. So that means that over a two-year period, these companies have been subsidized by the Forest Service at the rate of about $100 million a year. So it becomes very difficult for a village corporation or the Sea Alaska Regional Corporation to compete with other timber companies which are so highly subsidized by our taxes. Comparable subsidies should be granted to the Native corporations. Thirdly, I think there needs to be some training of shareholders through scholarships and grants for some members to acquire training which will help the corporations in the future. As I mentioned earlier, Natives were made shareholders by fiat, and many did not really understand what being a shareholder involved. In some regions of the state in 1971, the average formal education level was 3 years, and many of the shareholders were not fluent nor literate in English. Yet somehow they were supposed to organize corporations, enter the business world, and be successful so that their descendants might have a profitable corporation in return for the lands they have given up. This was really too much to expect. It was as if they were programmed for failure, as Mr. Ward said. Today we can still salvage some success, I feel, by providing scholarships and grants for Natives who need formal education, who have the ability and the talents to help the corporations in the future. The details would have to be worked out, but they may be given loans, or if they're willing to work for their corporation for some prescribed time or provide some service, the loan could be given to them. On a broader scale, some assistance can be provided for all the shareholders so that they too may understand more fully what their corporations are doing. Already, many corporations have provided some public information programs. There needs to be much more of this before 1991 so that shareholders can make good decisions regarding the retention or sale of their shares. As a sideline, I might mention that if you estimate some of the value of the shares in the corporations, people may not realize what their shares are really worth. And come 1991, they could be very gullible and taken in by any outsider coming in offering them money. Fourthly, I think there should be a certain tax protection. According to the Act in 1991, the land owned by the corporations may be taxable. There should be some protection for undeveloped lands or lands not used for commercial purposes. And many of the lands belonging to the regional village corporations lie within the boundaries of some cities or boroughs. Theoretically, these lands could be taxed in 1991. Some provision needs to be made so that the widespread taxing of undeveloped lands will not bankrupt the corporations. So in conclusion, some people have said that the Settlement Act of 1971 was simply a ploy to eventually strip the natives of their land and resources. And there are people today who say that this is exactly what's happening. They maintain that in 1991 we'll see a rush to sell shares, and that those shares will be snapped up by large corporations or wealthy individuals, and there will no longer be any such thing as a native corporation. If that is what the shareholders decide to do, that's their prerogative. However, I think it's the duty of the United States government to provide the means for the shareholders to make these choices intelligently. Secondly, the corporations themselves need to be given some assistance so that they can achieve their full potential by 1981, thereby allowing the shareholders a true choice. So thank you for allowing me to express my views and opinions. I've lived in Alaska for more than 20 years, and God willing, I'll be here another 20. And I'd like to have the people make a real choice to make this one of the greatest states in the nation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Earl. Thank you very much.
My name is Walter Johns. I'm a shareholder for Sealasa Corporation and also Gold Belt. And I have a lot of concerns, you know, that I have had since even before the corporation came into being. I remember that we had a hearing that was held here in June, just prior to the passing of the land claims down at the Filipino Community Hall. And I remember that at the meeting that I spoke against the land claims, that I did not want to see our native people involved with land claims. And my major concern were hunting, fishing, and subsistence, and also termination. And, you know, I've heard a comment about, you know, concern for our culture. My concern is rather for our people and the future of our young people. You know, you look around at the things that have transpired in the lower 48 with our brothers, our Indian people from south, who made their living through the buffalo. That was their whole culture. And you look up here in Alaska and you see what is happening up here in Alaska, and one thing that I see occurring is that our rights to utilize a resource called salmon in Alaska is being slowly taken away from us. I remember as a young man, I went out and I did some purse seining, and I eventually quit because there really isn't that much money in purse seining, although it was connected to our culture. And you look at the different rules, regulations, and the things that have happened up here in the last 15 years, those, you know, that's being taken away from us. And the more our fishing rights are taken away, the more it's going to put us into a place where we will become what I call a welfare state, you know, our native people. The unemployment in a lot of the villages, although the State Department of Labor will say 15% or something like this, is more like 80 or 90%. And most of the people that work there are under what you call a false economy. They work for, you know, they're fishermen or they work seasonal work. And as I look over the last few years, you know, our hunting and fishing is slowly being taken away from us, and they also tried to take our subsistence. We don't have our language, we don't, you know, and even as a native, I get bawled out because I can't speak Tlingit, you know, and yet there was, in school, we were completely forbidden to speak, and no one came into the school to, you know, really to, there was no changes in that area for us as younger people. But I spoke against land claims, and then I know I got a few people upset at me during that time, but I was also concerned because of what I call termination, which I believe is losing our rights as American Indian people. And what the corporations have done is they've changed the name and they call it stock alienation. And to me, that just kind of pretties it up a little bit, you know. Sure, I'm concerned about stock alienation, which means that people, after 1991, people will be able to sell their stock or be sued. And I am concerned about that. But overriding all of this, I believe we're going to lose a lot of our rights. You look at the things that are happening here, even right here, as far as the Bureau of Indian Affairs. You know, we're losing funds that normally would come to Tlingit and Haida because of the activities of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and we're losing a lot of our fundings. And there's a lot of things that are happening to us here in Juneau. And I'm concerned that not too much is being done by none of the corporations in regards to 1991. I was recently involved with the 1985 study, and I went around to different communities and did some surveys, and I was basically shocked by the attitude by a lot of our Native people. What they're saying, a lot of them are saying, is that they will sell their stock. And I don't, you know, with me, I don't look at the stock, you know, that doesn't belong to me. The stock belongs to my grandfather and belongs to my grandchildren. And when we sell our stock, we're giving up our land and our resources. But then, you know, when you sit down and talk to the people, what they're saying is the reason they want to sell is because they don't believe that, they believe that we will lose our land and its resources anyway if we don't do anything about it now. And these are the things that I'm hearing. And I believe that the land claims should have focused also on our resources. We had gold, we had fish, we had a lot of resources that were taken out of the state of Alaska before land claims that I believe that the Native people should have been paid for. And I know as I talk to some of our elders, they tell me that was part of the original concept for land claims was not only for the land itself, but for its resources and the resources that are being taken now and in the future, but also back from when people first came from Europe. You know, I always look at things like when I was in school, they taught me that Columbus discovered America. And then as I grew up and did some more studying, I found out that, the guy, how could he discover a land that people were already living on? And I remember when we were in school, we asked this question and the teachers would get angry at us. And we'd get in trouble for asking questions like this. And as I grew up and did some more studying, I found out that Columbus had to borrow money from a woman to come over here. And when he came over, he was lost. You know, he thought he was in India, and that's why we're called American Indians. So the dude was lost, he thought he was in India, and we get stuck with the name American Indians because of, you know, Christopher Columbus. And I'm concerned over the things like this, but, you know, I look at down the road, and I have a beautiful 13-year-old daughter. And when she becomes 21, what will I tell her that I did when everything the transaction that occurred during my time? Dad, what did you do to try to change some of this? Or my sons, I have two sons that are, you know, one is the University of Washington and one is living in Anchorage on his own. What will I tell them that I did to try to change some of the things that are occurring right now, you know, here in the state of Alaska? A young lady came up to me the other day, and she, you know, we were talking about the different things that are happening with the, you know, like the board of directors for the different corporation. And what she asked me was, do you think that these board members would put up for collateral their land that they own, their house or their cars, to go into a business deal that they're going into right now? I told them, no, I don't think they would. And she said, well, how come they can just put up our land for collateral? Because when they're doing that, they're putting up our future, our children. And I'm concerned that so much of our land, as it gets put up for collateral, that even before 1991, you know, we will have lost not only our land, but its resources. And when I look at, you know, like the government, you know, you hear a lot of testimony by different people, and there's a lot of racism here in this state. And I look at even environmentalism is something that has come up to basically to usurp minorities and native people of their rights. You know, people can talk piously about saving the eagles, which we as native people are concerned about just as much or more so than they are, or saving the bears or trees and the salmon, and we're concerned about that. But each time you hear testimony by environmentalists, what they seem like the only time they testify is when it's concerning native people and our native corporations. They want to stop any kind of development that we could have as a people. And you look back into the history of land claims, you know, Alaska did not belong to Russia in the first place. You know, I sit there and in my mind, I say, how in the world did America buy Alaska from the Russians when the Russians didn't own Alaska? And so we have an exchange of a piece of paper called a treaty, and we exchange that for some more piece of paper called money, and in that process, we as Alaska Native people lost our land and its resources. We weren't involved with that negotiation, and so we end up losing our land. We didn't give it up, and land claims was not the U.S. government giving Alaska Native people land. This land belonged to us. Long before the white man came to Alaska, this land belonged to us. And so we just got back part of the land that originally belonged to us. But as I said earlier, I spoke against the land claims. I was against it. And I guess in philosophy, I still am. But it's here, and there's probably not too much that I, as an individual, can do to try to change that. There's been so many things that have happened. I guess it's one of the biggest money exchanges for lawyers that was ever created by anyone. And Alaska Native people were really, we were forced to become citizens. And I'm not saying that I didn't want to be a citizen, but we're the only people that had forced citizenship placed upon them. And I look at the our resources that are being taken right now from our Alaska, our timber, our fishing. Here in Southeast, we're involved with timber and fishing. And I've always been concerned over the fact that both of these businesses are capital intensive and labor intensive. In other words, it requires a lot of money and it requires a lot of people, and you have to pay the people to, you know, in order to do the work. The thing that I don't like about it is I don't see much of this capital or the jobs going to shareholders. We don't, you know, you look at Hobart Bay, you look at what's happening with gold build out at Hobart Bay, and there isn't that many Native people that are working. Someone told me there was only 5 people out there working at, for gold build. And all of the timber activities, there isn't that many Native people involved. And I believe that, you know, like for the longshoring, that it should be 100% shareholders. And if they complain about a union, let's form a union. What does it take to form a union? Let's form our own union and keep our people, at least let them work with some of the, you know, like longshoring. Termination will be, or 1991, when this comes about, and we can sell our stock or we can be sued, or we can put up our stock for collateral to borrow and then eventually lose our land, our stock. When we lose 51%, we have lost control of our corporation and basically lost all of our resources. And I'm really concerned that not enough is being done by our corporation to turn around and do something with 1991. I agree that there's a lot of things that we can't redo. But I believe that we could look at 1991 and do a lot more than is being done. And another issue that I think is of concern, that we have a lot of concern here in Juneau, is the conflict of interest between, we have board of directors that serve on Gold Belt and Sea Alaska, and they exchange money, they borrow money, and they'll forgive part of the monies, and a lot of things are happening in this area, and I believe that to me it's something that should not be allowed. I don't believe that one person should be allowed to serve on both boards for Gold Belt and for Sea Alaska. We have enough talent where we can have different boards for each one so that both are adequately represented, although we're the same people, yet they're still different organizations. I'm also concerned that there is way too much influence by the lawyers. It seems like the lawyers just say something and then we jump and we do what the lawyers say. And I really don't like that. Lawyers are basically negative people. I mean, you know, everything about lawyers is negative. You know, when they get involved, it's because there's a problem. And the way they look at it, if it's legal, it's all right. But there's morals and there's ethics that need to be involved within our corporations. And that's where my concern is for the conflict of interest, because I believe that it's just because it's legal, that we shouldn't be allowed to serve on both of these boards. And I believe that we need to, and I've gone up and we even submitted a proposal to Sea Alaska about a year ago on an idea of how to train our young people. And it's real simple. It may take a few dollars, but I don't know if we have that much money anymore. But I felt that what we need to do is to go to all of our corporations and do a study, a feasibility study, to look down the road 5, 10, 15, 20 years to see what kind of jobs would become available in the future. Go back to our schools, begin talking to our young people, and begin tracking them. You know, there's a tracking system now that exists that takes our kids out of school. That's why we have a big dropout rate here in Juneau. We don't even have one Native teacher in this school system, and I believe it's because of racism. And what we need to do is talk with our young people and begin to, look at what's going to be on the road down the road 15, 20 years from now, and start talking to our kids when they're in 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, and begin tracking them into an educational system where when they come out, when they come out of high school, they'll be geared to go to one, two, or three different areas of expertise when they go into college. Once they go from there, when they leave college, they should be able to come back and go to work for our corporations, where the goal should be in 10 years, it'll be completely run by shareholders. And I believe that this is possible, but it's going to take a lot of work, and it's going to take a lot of what we have now is we have maybe guys that have a turf and they don't want it disturbed by anyone else, especially some young whippersnapper that might really. And you look at our young people, you know, they're a lot smarter than we are. Would you agree? And when you look at our young people, they're sharp. I have a son that, while he was in high school, started his own stock club, and he went to some of the white kids that had the money, and he told them he was going to start a stock club. He took their money, then he invested it on the market, and he made money. He didn't get rich, but he made money on the stock market. How many of our corporations can say they did that? He was 15 years old when he did that. And so our kids are just really, the next generation is really sharp, and I believe that they have potential. You know, and you look at, I've always said that if you took a corporation, what happened to Alaska Native people up here is, you know, one day we're Indian people, we're fishermen, the next day we were shareholders for a corporation. If you did the same thing to any other race, white people, black people, I don't care. I'm talking about just the grassroots people, and you made them run a corporation the way it happened to us, the same thing would happen to them that happened to us. We're no different from any other race. Now, if we would have went out and got hired people from General Motors or Xerox or the oil companies, maybe things would have been a little different. Just like my wife and I, we all say, what would have happened if the Jews would have got what we got? You know, they probably would own Alaska. But, you know, but I believe that we need to do something in the future for our kids. I believe that one of the things that the corporations need to do is look seriously at putting some of our land in trust. My wife and I first went to Sea Alaska and Gold Belt and talked to some of them about it, and they laughed us to scorn. They thought that was silly. And I believe that's what we need to do, is seriously look at putting some of our land in trust and not let the lawyers have so much influence. They have way too much influence. And my opinion is we need to cut the board of directors from Sea Alaska from 18 to 9 and have some drastic changes in that area. But I believe there are things that maybe we can do, but my concern is for the future, for my children, my grandchildren, and I could probably say a few more things, but I think I'll stop there, and I just would like to thank you for letting me give a testimony here tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Johns. Thank you very much, sir.
Hello, my name is Lyanna Wallace. I'm a student, full-time student at the University of Alaska. For the last 3 years, I've been trying to go to school to earn an education degree. So far, I've been able to go to school for 2 years because it's been really hard for me to find the funds to go to school. Now that I've resorted to the getting loans from the state, I have another problem. I go to the university and they're unable to teach me what I want to know. For me to go to school to get a regular education degree, I have to go to school for 4 years. Excuse me for shaking, I'm not used to this. But after 4 years, I have to go to school for another whole year and a half to earn special degrees in Tlingit languages and Eskimo languages and arts and crafts. I think it's unfair, but that's what I want to teach, so that's what I have to do. Okay, for me to go to school for that long, I also want to be able to teach about Indian law. Nowhere in the state of Alaska do they offer it. In fact, the only place they offer anything like that would be in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I have a family to raise. I can't just get up and move, so I can't learn it. So what I've done is I've done volunteer work for Tlingit and Haida and tried to get into different organizations to find out myself. Now, this takes special time and money out of my own pocket to go work full-time somewhere to try to find out what's going on. I spend a lot of my time in my own law libraries to do research. I listen to things on TV and radio and try to learn, and it's really difficult. So I really would like to stress that more funds be made available for educating the people, and that more programs be made available that handles the problems and that could help the student that is going to school. That's it.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Wallace. Thank you.
I'd like to read something here that I wrote when I first heard that you were coming to town, something that I felt had to be said.
Your name?
My name is Leonora Florendo. I own 100 shares of stock each in Gold Belt, Inc. and the Sea Alaska Corporation. I am also the custodian for an equal number of shares owned by two minor children. I have one child, 9 nieces and nephews, and numerous cousins who were born after the magic date of December 18, 1971. Let me take a breath here.
Sure. I'll take one.
This is the first time I've done this. I was born and raised in Juneau. My father, Tony Florendo, and my mother, Nora Marks, were founding members of the Juneau Filipino community. I am the first grandchild of Emma Marks of Yakutat and Willie Marks of Huna. In 1973, my family and I relocated to the East Coast in order for me to pursue a college degree. With scholarship assistance from Teenage Central Council, I began my studies in 1975 and graduated from Harvard University with a bachelor's degree in sociology in 1980. I returned to Alaska in 1982. I was away from home for a long time. During that period, the corporations became a reality. They and Native organizations grew by leaps and bounds, expanding at almost breathtaking speed. My only contact with my corporations during that period had been through annual reports, the corporate newsletters, and long-distance conversations with individuals soliciting proxies and interview responses. And then the impact of the national economy and our own decision-making began to negatively affect our growth and our progress. We seemed to be scrambling to prevent a deterioration which would spell our ultimate demise. Since my return to Alaska, I've come to understand why we as shareholders have been kept basically ignorant of the current status of the various operations of Native corporations in general, and with no roadmap to explain how we got to this point. I did know who our corporate leaders were. Many individuals were rising stars when I left, and may be fading stars now. Native leadership has remained basically static since the 1960s. The rising stars were trained on the Johnson-era Great Society Proving Grounds, where they were groomed and nurtured to move into the corporate positions which were inevitably provided by ANCSA. They raised our corporations from fledglings to recognized and respected corporate structures. Now we are at a critical stage in our corporate histories. The rising stars have proved their worth time and again and have become shining stars worthy of the respect and declarations of support bestowed upon them. However, I suspect that their usefulness to our people and the corporations has come to a point where perhaps it is time to move on. All good managers and leaders know when that limit has been reached. This is a new day for us, and in the Native tradition, the current leadership must bestow upon the new the benefits of their wisdom and allow them to move on to the next level. I make the above suggestion because I recently attended an informational meeting for my corporation, which was indeed very informative. During the meeting, various issues were raised, pointed questions were asked, and numerous comments were offered. I came away from that meeting wondering if I was, in fact, more knowledgeable about our corporate operations than when I had been away, receiving only annual reports and newsletters. I wondered if other shareholders are experiencing the same level of frustration that I am. I would like to use this arena to present comments and information for all corporation boards and shareholders across Alaska to consider. I believe the time has come for some of our leaders to move on. First of all, I am certain that those individuals who sacrificed their time and energies to achieve a fair and equitable land claim settlement for tribes indigenous to Alaska did not envision the current corporate forms as being the fruits of their commitment and labors. I believe their purpose was to provide for those generations yet unborn, that these youngsters would benefit from hunting and fishing rights and a land base which would be theirs. The corporations, imperfect vehicles that they are alien institutions devised by leaders in Washington, D.C., who ultimately still have final control over what the end result will be. 1991 is only 7 years away. At that time, whether our Native corporations are viable or solvent, or even have the support of their shareholders, is dependent on how well the boards of directors prepare the corporations and prepare us to handle our own affairs as of December 18, 1991. Secondly, I am concerned with what I perceive to be both a reluctance and a refusal on the part of some boards of directors to comprehend and to deal with various issues raised by their shareholders. Any issue voiced by a shareholder is valid and demands insightful and thorough resolution. It is a shareholder's right and responsibility to question leadership from time to time. Shareholders are due the respect and courtesy given any shareholder in any other corporation, Native or non-Native. By the same token, board members are due the same respect and courtesy. Beyond that, board members must possess those qualities of honesty and integrity and show attention to responsibility, in addition to being responsive to the needs and concerns of their shareholders. Let us remember that traditional leadership has always consulted at length with its members and tribal leaders before understanding which decision was needed to be made and in which direction we should all follow. Certainly not all issues discussed at meetings which have been and continue to be raised about the conduct of business at the board level are discussed here. I have taken editorial